I have a very special guest today, one I'm very excited about having on the pod, and that is Becky Holmes. And she's the creator of and the voice behind the popular Twitter, I guess now X, account, Death to Spinach. Having been on the receiving end of an annoying number of direct messages from online romance scammers, Becky started to enjoy wasting their time and then publicly outing their account. No other woman has had so many online romances, from Keanu Reeves to Brad Pitt to Prince William, and she's a firm favorite with the brave US peacekeeping soldiers and oil rig workers who desperately need iTunes vouchers or Amazon gift cards. Becky's forthcoming book, Keanu Reeves Is Not In Love With You, looks at all aspects of romance fraud, from the heartbreaking to the hilarious, the academic to the anecdotal, and discusses where we're going wrong when dealing with those inflicted.
We're here to make a dent in the universe, or else why are we even doing this?
If I don't think I cut out all the fun stuff, because that to me is the fun stuff.
Build that audience, because if you've got no one to sell it to, then it's just going to flop and die, and no one likes a floppy, right?
I'm yet to meet a woman who just kind of grew up confidently in her body.
Welcome to my podcast. I'm Nicole Brumner. Join my weekly conversations with really interesting people as I delve into the stories and experiences that make them uniquely them.
Becky, welcome. I had to giggle during that intro where it said nobody likes a floppy. My goodness, you've seen more than your fair share of non-floppies.
Non-floppers. Yes, I have. Lucky old me.
Lucky you. And my first question really is, how on earth did you attract so many of these scammers and dick pics?
Oh, well, I mean, they are two separate groups. It started off with the scammers. And then, of course, as you grow a social media profile and your inbox is open, you know, for questions, for comments or whatever, you're just a sitting duck then. Or sitting dick. Yeah, so the scammers is kind of one thing that I enjoy doing. And then there's these guys who think that what I really want to do on, say, a Tuesday afternoon is open my inbox and see their bits and pieces. And I can assure you that nobody wants that.
Nobody at all. And we'll go and we'll have a chat about Twitter. But that, I think, is such, so evident of those times was for these dick pics to come into your inbox.
You know, it's so weird. And it's kind of got me on a bit of a, I guess, like a Google rabbit hole, because I started researching, you know, what do they get out of it? And who are these people? And, you know, there's an online safety bill coming in, which is apparently going to help keep us safe. But I don't think it can ever be managed. I think that we will always have to put up with this. You know, it used to be that if you wanted to flash at somebody, you had to get a Mac and go and stand behind a hedge and sort of jump out unsuspecting women. Now you can just do it from your house and no one sees your face. It boggles my mind.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And I think what you were very clever at doing is channeling all of this negativity, really, because this is sexual assault, no matter how you look at it. This is sexual assault. And what you've done is you've harnessed it really well through Twitter, now X, and you've managed to build your whole brand and persona on that. So let's have a look at that, because I first came across you on Twitter and you're one of those people that I'm really envious of, because you've always got a clever quip and an intellectual reply, and you know how to craft words into that short, it was what, 145 characters, it's now 280 or even longer. You know how to do that. So how did you first get started on Twitter, and when was it that you realized that this was more than just something that you could play around with?
So I joined Twitter during lockdown. If it hadn't been for COVID, I still probably wouldn't be on it, because I'd shied away from social media a little bit. But I was really, really fed up, and the news was very depressing. And I wanted to be able to kind of go out into the world and pick what I saw, so I could pick who I'd follow and that kind of thing. But obviously, it didn't really end up like that. So as soon as I joined Twitter, I put a picture up of myself. At the time, I was early 40s. And if there's a picture of you as a woman on your own, perhaps of a certain age, you become like a magnet. So I had so many messages in my inbox from these, you know, really, really, really handsome men, all who had fallen in love with me immediately. You know, we hadn't spoken, but they were absolutely in love with me, you know, and rightly so. initially, I was just blocking and deleting and sort of giggling occasionally, but just getting rid of it. And then it, I don't know, maybe 2-3 months down the line, I just thought, I have nothing to do. I am bored. I've got nothing to do. I can't. I've completed Netflix. I'm going to reply. So I did. And I decided to try and see how much this person was going to listen to me. So I started putting the most random things that I could think about. And this person on the other end of Twitter did not deviate from his script. He wanted money. And even though I asked him to put a series of vegetables at my bottom in the end, don't ask me why, I just wondered how he'd react. Didn't bat an eyelid. It was just that he needed money. It became fascinating to me. And I got more and more bizarre with the things that I was saying. Mm. And it eventually became something that I was having so much fun doing. I mean, at the time, I didn't know anything about romance fraud and I didn't know, you know, how devastating it is. So at the time, I was just messing around, sort of having fun, you know, in my bedroom in the middle of lockdown, really.
Yeah. And then you did uncover this more sordid side of the romance fraud. And how did you uncover that? Was that something that, did it happen to you or you started researching about it?
No, I'm fortunate that I haven't been a victim of romance fraud. I mean, in the traditional sense, I did have a very greedy ex-partner, which perhaps made me more sympathetic to people who'd been victim. It started because I was screenshotting these conversations and placing them up on Twitter and, you know, getting a lot of positive feedback and people sort of laughing and, you know, saying it was funny and that they didn't know about any of this. But I also started receiving messages via direct message on Twitter from people who had been a victim of romance fraud saying, I'm really glad to see that someone is talking about this because this is what happened to me. And I ended up becoming kind of a sounding board for a few ladies who hadn't told anybody else in their life. And we were having phone conversations, you know, and they hadn't told their partner, their children, their parents. And these stories that I was hearing and how devastating it is as a crime, more so, I would argue, than any other type of fraud. That's when I started to research it more because I realized that no one talks about it.
And it's so devastating, as you say, more so than any other fraud. You don't fall in love with other fraudsters. You don't plan your whole life and your future together with that person and tell your friends and family perhaps that you've met the one and just go all in on it. And that's devastating for women and for men. And yeah, so you kept going with this and that was the sort of the romance fraud side. And I guess you inadvertently became a bit of a spokesperson for that and a sounding board for these mainly women that were going through this. What about the dick pics? How did that happen?
Well, they just popped up. There's one guy in particular, anybody that follows me on Twitter will see. His name is Greg and he regularly sends me photos. And this guy, there is a certain types of guys who send these. Greg is probably the most naive sex pest the world has ever seen because he does not seem to understand that what he's doing is wrong. He thinks that when he sends one of these pictures to women, he thinks that they're somehow then in a relationship. So he's very naive, but that makes him very dangerous because there are no boundaries for him. So he's kind of one who I find Greg really, really interesting. He's such an odd character. There was also another guy who I would argue is very dangerous. And actually, I'm trying to get hold of someone in the States to help me track down this guy so someone can talk to him, you know, from a legal perspective. But this guy sends very, very aggressive photographs. I won't describe them in detail because they're quite horrific. And he says very aggressive things. And he, again, this is an odd one because he will message these. He's over in the States. He'll message 10 of these photos. And then a few hours later, he'll send an apology. And then the next day that the same thing happens. And then he'll message to say that he's a drug addict and he can't control himself and he hates what he's doing. But the fact that he's so very, very aggressive in his language, his stance, the images that he sends, this guy's got a humiliation kink. So he's very underendowed, let's put it that way. And he gets his sexual satisfaction from people telling him that there's nothing to see, telling him that he's disgusting. So I don't engage with this guy because I don't want to give him what he wants. But he's a dangerous character and it worries me that there are a lot of people out there like him. Sorry to have a rant. I'm going to use an example of one more. There was a guy who sent me an image and it was him topless. And he wrote across it, I rape women and I love it. Wrote across his chest. And he sent me this photograph. And he wrote underneath it, "Send me nudes of yourself or I will rape you." So I put this picture up on Twitter. I covered up all his bits and pieces because I didn't want everyone to have to see. Now, Twitter told me to take it down, their reason being because he was entitled to his privacy. And for many, it just in one instance is what's wrong with social media. The fact that, you know, he wasn't, his account wasn't taken down, even though he'd sent a threat, he'd sent this horrible, horrible thing. And yet, if somebody tries to expose him, they're told no because he needs his privacy. I was absolutely gobsmacked. I was horrified. You know, I had a ban for a week because of it.
That is awful, isn't it? And you think about, you do the whole report or the block and report, but you don't even know if anyone's looking at that. And also, what a horrific job for someone to have to trawl through these images of abusers and have to determine whether these have broken the guidelines or not. It's just horrible that people have these kinks that are just so incredible. Now, I guess with the second one that you were talking about, you were talking about him in present tense, as if he still sends you those pictures. Have you not blocked him because you are hoping to get in touch with someone who can assist him in some way, or close him
now? I've blocked around 15 accounts of his, as have many, many other people that contact me on Twitter about him. Mm-hmm. He's prolific. And every time one of his accounts gets shut down, he just gets a new email address, set up a new account. So it's almost pointless to do that now. But what I would like to do is, I don't want to say I want to get him help, because actually it makes it sound like I'm on his side, but I think he needs to be stopped. So I think that if I can find somebody who can, you know, find out which area he's in, and somebody from the police force over there pay him a visit, I think that would be at least a start.
Yeah, you don't know how horrific his other activities are. And so, yes, just stop that. Yeah. And how did all the celebrities come about? How did Keanu Reeves come about?
So online romance fraud is, it's so big. It is so big. And there are a large number of them who pretend to be celebrities in order to scam money out of people. And the most impersonated one is Keanu Reeves. Now, this is interesting because he's famously not on any social media at all. He doesn't touch it. And in fact, his publicist came out a few months ago and said, if you think you're speaking to Keanu Reeves on, you know, Twitter or Instagram, whatever, it's not him. It hasn't stopped the scammers making profiles. People always say to me, well, why would you send money to somebody who you think, you know, you think it's Keanu Reeves? He's a multimillionaire. But they're very clever in what they do, the people pretending to be celebrities. So they might say to you that they are part of a charity and, you know, they want people to donate through them for the charity. They will make it sound as if they think you've got something quite special, you know, since you've been chatting. You know, somebody who they would want to be with would have to be a charitable kind of person. Oh, and, you know, this is the details of a charity I'm setting up. You might want to make a donation. There's also one which is very common is they will tell you that they can offer you a meet and greet package. So this would be, there are three levels for, let's just say $500. You and a group of friends can go out and see a secret performance of this person. For $1,000, you and that group of friends can meet this person. But the very gold standard, $1,500, you can have a drink with that celebrity on your own. Now, the celebrity might say, I really, really wish I could meet you on my own. My management is really strict and this is the only way that I can do it. But please come and meet me. It would be really good. There are a number of ways that these celebrity scams work. Actually, some of them are quite sophisticated. So I make light of the celebrity scams because it kind of suits the purpose of what I do. But some of them are, you know, they're pretty good.
I was surprised with your interactions with them that you would share how scripted they are. And it's kind of like what you said right at the beginning, how that first person, Greg, I think, did not deviate from the script, no matter what you threw at him, vegetables up different orifices and things like that. He just did not deviate. And that's what, this is so well organized and so well orchestrated that these people must have this script that they stick to no matter what, because everything was coming back to it. This is very well organized.
It is. There's a bit of a misconception that, you know, a romance fraudster is somebody sitting on their bedroom on their own, just working in isolation, you know, getting money occasionally from somebody. It's huge, and it's organized crime. So the people who are involved in romance fraud, the money that they get from that, it also goes to fund other crimes. So gun crime, drugs, prostitution. It's absolutely enormous. People work in huge organizations and they do have scripts. And, you know, I was fortunate enough for the book to get hold of some scripts and I've included some excerpts in there. You know, it's when you, there are some really appallingly bad ones out there, but some of them are really quite something. And I've heard of them employing psychologists. So to look at what it is will actually really, you know, induce somebody to send money. They look at current events that are happening and try and tie things in with that so that you believe that something's going on at the same time, particularly with if somebody's saying they're setting up a charity, for example. So when Russia invaded Ukraine, there were suddenly tons of President Zelensky accounts coming up asking people for money because it's they're looking at something that's going on, people's heartstrings are pulled and they want to donate. So some of them are really sophisticated.
Yeah. And has Twitter changed now that it is X? And is it somewhere that you still feel comfortable being on? Has it become worse, better?
It's a very different place to how it was. Twitter initially was a social network and people went on there to virtually socialize. You could have debates with people and you could, you know, I've met some real life friends now through Twitter. As things progress in terms of politics and people are so polarized now in terms of opinions and stuff, it's become very toxic and people are leaving in its droves. And Elon Musk, when he took over, really didn't help the cause at all. So he's made things very difficult, and particularly in terms of the fraud angle, because he took away the blue tick, for example. So there was a point where you might be able to persuade somebody that they weren't talking to, I don't know, a celebrity because they didn't have a blue tick. Now someone can buy a blue tick. You know, he's taken away some of that, and people, so many people are leaving X because it has become really toxic in many respects. And if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, I don't think I would still be on there either.
Yeah, it's a shame because people like yourself who have built their whole profiles and businesses around that, it's now not a place they can go. And toxic's the word that we hear all the time. What do you think could change that? Do you think that having people like this horrible men that send you these unwanted pictures, do you think by having verified accounts for everyone across the board, it might in some way stop some of this toxic environment?
Yeah, there's been quite a few talks among the kind of anti-fraud world about would it be possible to make everybody verified? Like a bit that they are on some of the dating sites. You have to do certain things, you know, to with your photo so that they can then say, okay, you are that person. I think the problem is that Twitter is in the hands of somebody who sees it as a purely financial asset. So that would take a lot of time and a lot of investment in order for that to happen. And I don't think he's prepared to do that. So I think now we're left with, I don't know, maybe it's only the foolish and the brave that are still on there. I'm not sure. I think maybe I'm in the former category.
Have you found anywhere that also works for you? I see you're active on LinkedIn as well. Is that helping?
Yeah, so I do bits and pieces on LinkedIn, but that's mainly really because I occasionally give presentations to the anti-fraud world and I've made a lot of contacts through interviewing people for the book. So I like LinkedIn as a space. I think it's quite nice. Having said that, there are scammers on there as well. I was probably going back a year now. I was doing some research into fraud coming from Nigeria because it is still one of the areas that some of the romance fraud comes from. So I was linking in with various people who had contacts with Nigeria so I could interview them. And I had a few requests come in to link in. And one of them was in the government in Nigeria. Now, you'd think by now that I would be super everything, but I thought, oh, brilliant. So clicked on him. And when I looked at his profile, I thought, who is this person? So I've had people message me on there, you know, who've said, maybe we can talk, but there would be a fee. They're all over the place. So I do enjoy LinkedIn. I am on Facebook. I love a bit of Facebook because it's people that I actually know on there. I joined Threads, you know, Meta's answer to Twitter. And I do post on there, but I don't have a big audience and I don't find it as user-friendly. The problem is I've become a Twitter addict. And, you know, that's where my audience is. That's the people who engage with what I post. And at the moment, because it's my first book that's coming out, I sort of need that platform in order to raise awareness of not only the book, but what I'm doing, you know, subsequently as well. So it's a bit You know, when you first buy an Apple phone, I mean, I've been with Apple for way over 10 years now. The reason being because I've got so many iTunes that I can't leave Apple because I won't be able to play them on any other device. So now I'm just stuck with it. And that's what it's like with Twitter. I'm stuck with it.
Yeah, that's right. And let's move to your book. First of all, congratulations on a book deal. That must be one of the highlights of your life. And it's Keanu Reeves Is Not in Love with You. So tell us what the book is about and how you came up with that name and whether Keanu is approving of that name.
One of my dreams is to somehow get that book into Keanu's hands. I think my agent's going to send one over to his agent when it's published in January. So we'll see. It's been a journey that I never, ever imagined that I would be on. And to be right at the end of it now, I don't know. Sometimes I'm just sitting watching TV and I think, oh, I've written a book. It hasn't kind of hit me that I've done it, you know, these couple of years of work. It came about purely through Twitter. There was an author who I really, really like called Kimberly Chambers. She started to follow me on Twitter and I messaged her in a real kind of fangirl way. And I said, oh my God, I love your book. And she said, I love what you're doing. I want to tell my agent about you. So she did. And I kept pushing and pushing this poor agent. Hello, look at me, look at me. Anyway, eventually we started working together on a book proposal. It got picked up by the publisher. It's been so much work, but I have enjoyed every minute. I'm saying that with a bit of hesitation because I know for a fact there have been times when I've just thought, no, no. In hindsight, I've loved every minute and we're right at the end point now and all it's at the printers. So all I can do now is just sit and wait.
Oh, I cannot wait to get a copy. I've ordered one and looking forward to reading that. So you were incredibly, I'm not going to say lucky because I don't believe in luck when you work so hard, but you're incredibly fortunate to have one agent that you courted and then one publisher. It shows that what you've done is really special and really unique. So
I wish that was the case. One agent, yes, but not one publisher. We went round the houses.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, the agent, my agent is PFD and they've got Ruby Wax, James Blunt, Bear Grylls, there's, you know, these sort of big, Michael Caine. They've got these big names. And then
Katie Holmes.
Yeah, so they've been great. I worked with them on the proposal. Obviously, they haven't done anything in terms of the actual writing, but I've just been sort of keeping them up to date with what I've been doing. And it's been really nice to think that a literary agent wanted me on their book. It's been a really, really tough few years for me prior to this. And my self-confidence was so low. So to have this happen, it really, I mean, I'm the same in that I know you have to make your own luck, but I do feel very, very fortunate.
Yeah. And so how have you found the actual book writing process?
I've always loved writing. So my previous life, I used to run a press office. So, well, many press offices throughout my career. So I always did quite a bit of writing. And I always knew it was something I wanted to do. I think I had it in my head that the process would involve having an idea, sitting down, writing it, sending it off, and off it goes. It gets published. I didn't quite realise how much there is involved with it. So it has to go through legal reads. It has to go through, I think it's like 5 different editing processes. And there were other things as well, some things that I'd never considered. Something my agent always talking about was the narrative arc. And I used to think, oh God, what's that? It's, you know, where this thing has to tell a story start to finish. And in a book like the one I've written, that's quite difficult. So at one point for about 2 weeks, my flat was covered in post-it notes where I had different things that I wanted to include, but I just did not know where in this arc it was going to go. I was getting up in the morning and moving these post-it notes around. And looking back on it, that was kind of fun. It was a really important lesson. So the process of writing has been extremely good fun, extremely hard. And the biggest lesson I think I've ever had is, you know, in 2 years, I've learned so much about the process. And I hope that if I do ever do another book going forward, I can at least some of those and not have to relearn.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's having also published a book, I think the biggest challenge about book number 2 is that you'll never follow up on the success of book number 1. Number 1 is just that you put everything into it. It's your baby and you deliberate so long and hard and then it is successful or it achieves what you wanted it to achieve. And then you think, never going to be able to do that again with number two.
You know, this is exactly it. I'm lying awake at night at the moment thinking, people have got really good reviews for this book. Shall I just never do anything else again? And that way I can kind of go out on a high.
So what do you touch on in your book?
So it goes through all elements of online romance fraud. So it uses my tweet as a way to be kind of fun and engaging. Because often when people talk about fraud, it can be really quite boring. Some guy gets up on stage and uses a lot of initialisms and acronyms and everyone starts looking on their phone secretly. So I've used my tweets to make it engaging. It talks about the types of romance fraud. So what you might want to look out for. I interview quite a few victims. So I've been to their homes and talked to them about their stories and, you know, followed up with them afterwards. I've spoken to a scammer himself over in Nigeria. I've looked at the script they've got. I've spoken to various organizations over here. So lawyers, banks, police, action fraud, psychologists, linguistic specialists. There's very few people in the world now that I haven't spoken to. I think it uses my own experiences as well. So I mentioned earlier that I had a very greedy ex-boyfriend and there was a lot of gaslighting going on and I didn't realize it at the time. And in addition to that, some years previous, I'd had an abusive relationship that I was in. And when I was talking to victims of romance fraud, I was thinking, God, that's really familiar. That sounds really familiar. And I started looking into the psychology behind it. So the root of any romance fraud and actually abusive relationship is coercive control. So the scammer or the abuser wants to make you entirely reliant on them. And they can manipulate you in that case. You know, once you're under the spell, they can manipulate you in whatever way that they want to. And you don't have to be, you know, a fat, unintelligent, middle-aged woman lying on a sofa. That's a myth. So many victims of romance fraud and, of course, domestic abuse, they're intelligent, attractive, articulate women. So I started looking into the psychology behind it and I was able to use so many of my own experiences to look at what happens when we fall under the spell of somebody. So the book is a real variety of all kinds of things. It's stuff that you don't know about romance fraud. It's stuff that is from my own experience. It's victims' experiences. And there's some kind of dark stuff in there as well about what happens overseas. So there's human trafficking. There's kidnap. There's so much to this subject. And I feel like I've written one book. I feel like I could write another five because I had to really jam all this stuff into one small book. The subject is enormous and it is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you say, it touches on so many different subjects. And
absolutely,
this now has made you an expert in that and someone who's able to speak about all of those various aspects of romance fraud with a level of authority, and that's what you do now. So where can people get your book and when will it be available?
So it can be pre-ordered now on Amazon. It will hit the shelves January the 25th. So of course, if you order it on Amazon, that's when it'll be sent out, or you can go into hopefully a local branch of wherever and pick one off the shelf at the end of January. Yeah, and I really hope that people enjoy it as a fun read, but I also hope that it helps people change their view on what romance fraud is and the kind of person who becomes embroiled in a romance scam, because these are some clever, clever women. I really want to make it clear that it isn't one type of person. And also, in actual fact, you know, men are just as likely to be a victim of romance fraud. It's done in a very different way and potentially something for another book, because I've focused on women for this one. But it's anybody. So you can be any gender, any race, any sexuality, any age. Nobody is safe from romance fraud. And I really want that to be one of the take-home messages from it.
I almost wonder if men were the original victims in a pre-online world. And then as society's evolved online, now it's more prevalent for women. If I just think back to the, anecdotally, of course, to the stories that I've heard over the years, it was men that were perhaps targeted initially and now women perhaps online. So yeah, it'd be interesting to look into that further.
It's a terrible stereotype, but unfortunately, when it comes to romance fraud, it's true. So women tend to be lured in with the promise of love and romance. With men, there's a much more sexual element to it. And then there's a whole chapter in the book on it, a huge level of sextortion. So a woman will say, you know, I'm going to send you a video of myself. I'd love to get one back. When the man sends one, suddenly that video, you know, they're threatening to send it over to wife, children, parents, whoever. So, you know, it's not to say it's always the same. Sometimes men, you know, it is a love and romance thing. That's what they're looking for. But 9 times out of 10, what people have found is that it tends to be the lure of sex. And the person that you think you're speaking to, more often than not, isn't a woman either.
You know,
it's a really under-researched area. One statistic that terrifies me is that currently fraud, and this is all fraud, not just romance fraud, counts for 40% of UK crime, which is a lot. But get this, police resource, so the police allocate 1% of their resource to fraud. And as you can imagine, romance fraud, because generally speaking, the amounts that are lost are much less than, say, pension fraud or investment fraud or something like that. They're at the bottom of the heap. So nobody is really helping. You know, the police, their hands are tied because of budget and because of time. And there's a whole area of society that is being completely exploited and just falling under the radar of anyone that can help. And when people do get help, it's a really, really good news story, but it's so rare.
Yeah, and the police don't have the forensic skills to deal with these sorts of fraud, because it's not just a case of, look, here's my bank statement, I sent that money there. These are forensic skills that are required, financial forensic skills, and I just don't believe that they have that within the police.
No. And similarly, so many of the perpetrators are out of UK jurisdiction. So at the moment, for example, there's a huge, huge number of frauds originating in Southeast Asia. They're called pig butchering scams. They're called that because the fraudsters liken the process to fattening up a pig for slaughter. And these are romance fraud mixed with investment fraud, so mixed with crypto fraud. So it starts off like a romance fraud. Somebody will show an interest, you know, you'll start to online date, as it were. When they'll start talking to you about an investment. Now, the technology behind these scams is insane. They set up their own investment screen so you can see your money going in and out. You can often take it out as well before they start to ask for bigger amounts. Now, when somebody then goes to take out some big win that they've had, suddenly the investment account has been shut down and you've lost your partner at the same time because suddenly they've disappeared. If you tell somebody in the UK police about that, that involves so much, you know, cross-jurisdiction work, there's not the time for it. And of course, it involves both parties being wanting to work together to do that. And sometimes it's just not the case. So it even works, you know, it's even difficult if you're in the UK and does each police force is sort of work separately. Say you've got a fraudster that's working across 5 different counties, even that can be a nightmare because everybody, you know, where do you start? So if you think about taking that over to Ghana or to Southeast Asia, it's a fraudster is almost guaranteed to get away with it.
So it's about being vigilant, isn't it? And being informed and understanding how you can be caught up in this, and hence your book.
Yes. And also, one thing I will say is one of the groups of people who have been scammed increasingly are the people who have said, well, I wouldn't fall for that. Because once you consider yourself to be above the level of someone who might fall for a scam, my least favorite phrase, you take your eye off the ball, you believe that you would never be party to this. So anyone talking to you, you wouldn't be in that, you know, that sort of demographic anyway. So it can't be that. And people have then lost money. And because they've scoffed at it in the past, they haven't wanted to report it because they would be seen as one of those people who they thought they were above.
Yeah, it's the same as anyone who doesn't believe in mental health issues. And then, of course, they
absolutely
fall so hard. Yeah, but let's end this on a happy note. I think personally for you, your life's going very well. I believe you got engaged earlier this year, did you?
I did. Because of this project.
Oh,
because
really?
Of this project. Yeah, so I was on, when I was writing the book, I went onto Tinder because I knew that a lot of scammers use online dating sites. And this local guy came up and I thought, oh, I'll just give him a swipe just in case. And here we are.
Well, congratulations, Becky. So what a year for you. You've published your book and you've gotten engaged and things are looking good for you. So look, Becky, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I cannot wait to read your book. I suggest that if anyone's interested in gifting this as a Christmas present, print it off from your profile, from LinkedIn, from Amazon, if you like shopping there, print it off, put it in an envelope and deliver it to them when it is available. Because if it's half as good as Becky's tweets, it will be very worth reading. So yeah, go and get it. It's a great book. Becky, thank you very much. And I wish you
thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And let's stay in touch.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please support us with a like, comment, subscribe, and share. And you can always join the conversation live across my YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages at 1 p.m. every Thursday. See you there soon.